We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Computer, this is Data.
I'm an android.
I'm Major League Basketball.
I was processing all of the information. Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Major League Basketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Hello, and welcome back to the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast. My name is Tom Z, joined as always by Tim, a.k.a. Gregis McBasketball. And a brutal, tough loss, all the words, Tim, in Game 2, after the Lakers had it seemingly in the bag, and they let one slip. But Tim, we're here for exceptionalism. We're going to talk through at least the strategy and why maybe you shouldn't, you know what I mean, all be doom and gloom. It feels bad, don't get me wrong, I get it. But the Lakers had strong performances in both games, despite going a run where they couldn't seem to score the ball. But that's okay. It seems like Darvin Ham is ready to fix everything here for Game 3, Tim.
I disagree. I disagree with that. we'll talk about what they might be able to change or what might go well. But it is tough losing that game too, Tom. I know Game 1, you know, they saw some good things, saw some clear bad things, like calling set plays 51% of the time. That's not going to cut it. Denver is at 67%. Puts things in perspective a little bit. They're not just, you know, a super amazing team with great two-man game. They're an amazing team with the great two-man game that also runs plays left and right. And so there was a big gap there. That game two, though, it felt like the one that LA deserved to have and had that 20-point lead. They were calling plays. D'Lo was cooking. AD was, you know, dominating. He was going at Jokic to the point where Denver had to switch matchups and try to hide him on Rui, and then they just kept going at him. Like, there was a lot that was going well, and then just like that first game where LA had a lead, it, you know, dripped away, and Denver was able to close harder. And it's so demoralizing because LA played well enough to have taken one of those two games. And if Bron hits that open pull up three off the stack action with, you know, that was LA's last possession, you probably win that game. Denver still has a chance for a three, but you probably win that game. And our mood and our outlook is so different right now. And, you know, maybe just one shot, two shots, that changes everything.
Maybe if they decided to run stack action five times in a row instead of three, they would have had three extra points, you know?
Why? They didn't run it. I mean, they ran it in two games. I think there was one time they used it a little bit earlier in the game. Let me see if I can find it. There was one other moment in the third quarter, 8 minutes, 35 seconds left. The play started. They ran, because you called it out live on the stream, there was the Rams action into the stack. So they ran it once there and they got a score. And then they didn't use it again until the final minute, 15 seconds. They ran it three times, got two scores, and then an open missed three. And Denver was certainly running plenty of drop coverage. You could have used this more. And they treated it like it was a flea flicker or something that you have to like hold on to and use for a special situation. No, just spam the good plays. I don't get this coaching, man. It's been really, really frustrating through these first couple games. And I think more and more people are seeing that.
Yeah.
But they still have a chance, but this is such a squandered opportunity.
Squandered opportunity. You have to win 4 out of 5 games, which against any team is hard to do, let alone against this team. We've talked so much about the margin for error being so small and them just not operating, you know, within that space. I don't care which team you're playing in the playoffs. You can't have 2 games where you go like 4 minutes without points. You just can't do that. And part of that, you know, is bad luck, to your point. They were got open looks on some of the freelance looks, but the process has definitely felt worse in the second half of both game one and game two. So I guess you mentioned it. Denver made some adjustments there in game two versus game one. They kind of played things out, started jumping some of the passing lanes and, you know, running Horn's chest. Jokic is reading it. They're getting comfortable. Game two, they really went with a bigger adjustment, which was to put Gordon on AD. Tam, we called it out live. It was in a stretch where they kept going to like that step up screen with LeBron. With AD and LeBron, right? And they switched Gordon and Jokic. So they put Jokic on Rui. Instead of like focusing going toward AD constantly, he was on fire in the first half. They pulled Rui into the action, really trying to focus on Jokic. So I guess talk me through how you felt about that and kind of what we saw thereafter.
Yeah, I understand the move from Denver. From their perspective, you don't want your best player being attacked like that on defense. LA was attacking it effectively. They probably feel if you can get Gordon in there, maybe he'll stand up better in the post potentially, or I don't know. They changed the matchups, but it didn't really change the look. Like the step up screen still gave you the same look, and LA kept going to it several times. It wasn't like that adjustment took the Lakers out of what they wanted to do. They kept doing it a number of more times. And we also saw like KCP guarding LeBron James, which LA did not post up at all, I don't think. So it felt like the Lakers could have made more of it. They kept attacking Jokic instead of trying to like go through AD, which I don't necessarily have a problem with, as long as Denver doesn't actually adjust tactically, keep going to the tactic that is working. And they did, and until they didn't. And that seems to be the story with this Lakers team. They go to what works until they get bored. And then they decide to freelance 8 out of 10 plays.
That's fair, especially in the second half. And I do think, I don't want to mention this too much, but that's the source of frustration for Anthony Davis's quote, that they don't know what they're doing out there and Ham going back and forth. But like, that's not a great sign. You know what I mean? That shows me that, I mean, there isn't at least that trust there. That player has to say something out to the public. But... Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It shouldn't be so simple as like a simple adjustment like that. And to be completely fair, right, the Lakers had their worst performance shooting at the rim the whole season. So if their second worst performance, if they shoot 48% at the rim versus 43, they were 10 for 23. And I was, shout out to our guy, Alex Regla, tweeting, it's the lowest he could find since around 21. Jeez. Three years, Tim. Like, that is bad luck. But at the same time, the process concern, you can't just all say we miss good opportunities. The process definitely hindered them there in that second half.
Yeah, absolutely. From a shot making standpoint, it was bad. But also from a shot quality at the rim standpoint, the types of looks the Lakers were getting were not quite as good. They're still pretty good, at least for my tracking. But it was a little bit down from what we saw in that first half. Getting to that AD quote, like, I think what he is referring to, because on the game overall, the Lakers were pretty organized. They were at 60% in game two. And for some context, 60%, that was their 7th best game on the season in terms of the percentage of their half court plays where they ran a set or ran a help. Okay. That was really good. But first quarter, 50%, that's not. 62% second quarter, that's awesome. Q3, 52%. Fourth quarter, 75%. And within that third quarter, they started like set. And they were just scoring and scoring and scoring. And when they didn't score, they got a great look. And then they just randomly stopped. And it wasn't, I looked back at it, it wasn't a timeouts thing. It wasn't an adjustments thing. It wasn't a matchups thing. There were no subs. There was no reason for this to happen. They just get comfortable.
I don't know what it is. There's no other explanation. Yeah.
It. I did. And people are rightfully asking, like, that doesn't make sense. There has to be something. I agree. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. That's the point. That's why I'm upset. It's one thing other team made an adjustment and you were stumped and then like something happened. But even then, if I'm running my RAM step up plays and you make an adjustment to stop those, either I adjust to your adjustment, I run a counter, or if I can't think of that on the fly, just go to something else. You've got like 10 different series of plays that you go to regularly, and like 7 of them were working really, really well so far through these 2 games. Just go to something else while you figure out what to do in that first thing. And so it's not like there's only one viable option and Denver took it away and now the Lakers had to sit on their hands. We saw them scoring repeatedly and getting really high quality looks and then have a stretch where they go freelance, heavily contested midi, freelance, heavily contested catch and shoot 3. They ran a help beater that got AD a pin and flare screen, which isn't what you want. And then a freelance turnover, freelance, heavily contested shot at the rim that was missed, freelance, heavily contested catch and shoot 3, freelance or shot at the rim that LeBron missed, he really should have made, and a freelance Anthony Davis Roman bad pass turnover. That stretch is so detrimental. They ran a set after that and missed a heavily contested 3, and then a couple more freelance plays in a row. They had 8 out of 10 plays were freelance. And for some context, I looked at every stretch of 10 plays this season for the Lakers, and there were only, let me make sure I mention this correctly. This was the 393rd time this season they've been that disorganized over a 10-play stretch, which is a lot of times, but it is still only a second percentile outcome, meaning 98% of the 10-play stretches for the Lakers this season have been more organized than that critical stretch during a key, like, felt like a must-win game 2 where you were up like 20 points and just got bored and decided to stop running plays. This was not normal. This was well below what we've come to expect from the Lakers, and is the reason you end up with a third quarter only at 52%, even when it started at like 95 and it finished at 95. Wow. You know, on the front and tail end of this stretch. So that stretch right there, I believe, is what Anthony Davis is probably referencing. And that is where the game turned.
Yeah. So just to be clear, there are 393 instances of 10 consecutive freelance plays this season, you're saying. And that was
no. I'm saying, great question. I think I phrased that poorly. There are 393 10-play stretches this season where the Lakers ran 0, 1, or 2.
Okay, got it.
So 8 or more freelance out of 10. Was 8 times they ran 0 out of 10, 100 times 1 out of 10, 285 times 2 out of 10. There have only been 2 10-play stretches, in the season where they've gone 10 out of 10 organized offense. And it hasn't been in like 30 games.
I mean, a 10-play stretch is not insignificant. Like that's a meaningful chunk of a quarter. And in the playoffs, if you're unable to, you're seeding a run of some kind to a home crowd that the Lakers were pretty consistently able to take out of both halves, both first halves. It's just all working against you. So not to belabor, brutal loss, game 2. Lakers have things that they're doing that are working, Tim. And their offense looked good. We saw improvement there on the play calling. You know, like you said, D'Lo, AD getting hot. What other adjustments? We've seen Denver icing Austin side, like ball screens. You have a counter they can employ for that? Or is there a way you'd like to see Austin get more involved?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this is one that we saw the Lakers have to deal with a lot last postseason. And goodness, I think it was one of our pregame shows for the Warriors series. I went through 11 different ways to counter icing ball screens. And among those, like you could do a lot of different things. One of those options is to try to just like disguise stuff a little bit better. Another way to deal with it is just kind of like snake the screen and try to get back to the middle. Another thing you can do is try to utilize handoffs. So like Chicago action is a great way to do this, the down screen into the handoff. The Lakers have scored 1.53 points per possession on this action through 2 games on Chicago action. Out of any series of plays, like getting to that specific down screen into the handoff, they're scoring 1.5 a play. And so they could definitely go to that some more. They ran it a bit this game and they scored really well on it. That is, you know, handoffs in general. We've seen those plays where they go to horns with the two guys at the elbows, two in the corners, one at the top of the key, and they'll feed AD on the right elbow and then he'll dribble at LeBron in the corner. We saw them run that play 3 times in a row in game one with a ton of success and then never use it again. That sort of thing, you can't really ice that. If you're going to try to keep LeBron from driving middle or Austin from driving middle, you were just giving up that back cut, which is what we saw the Lakers score on the first time they ran that. So
yeah,
handoffs, disguising what you're doing. You can try to, I guess, pick and pop against it potentially. Usually in ice, you're probably also in drop coverage. So you can run some drop coverage beaters. So there's a lot that you can do. I think getting to those handoffs is probably the easiest way to go about this, or using a little bit of disguise. The Lakers have a couple series of plays that start looking one way and then, oh, wow, it's double drag. And the defense doesn't have time to, you're not telegraphing the action well enough in advance for them to go out and try to ice it.
Okay. Hopefully Austin can get more involved. We were talking on stream that I thought he's done fairly well on Murray, considering where he's played on defense a lot of the year. So good to see him looking closer to the guy he was last year. So if he's able to be more impactful on defense, that's good enough for me for right now. But he needs to be able to, you know, keep advantages and make some of those open threes. He hasn't knocked down quite as much lately. So other adjustments from the Denver side. We talked so much about Jokic in the post. I feel like we've seen a lot of him getting post touches in the middle, Tim. Is there a different or more unique middle double coverage? Because that's a tricky place to be with him in one-on-one coverage.
Yeah, those are tricky, and those are the ones that you want to avoid. When he's on a block, there's a strong side and there's a weak side of the court, and passes to the weak side have more distance to cover, and the defense thus has more time to react. Passes to the strong side, quicker. That's why it's often, hey, don't help off the strong side corner. So that's the sort of stuff you hear, because the pass is right there, it's right in their face, the ball travels quickly, and you can give up some good looks. And so in general, doubling or sending help from the weak side, not just against Jokic, but in general against anybody in basketball, you know, that's why you have the weak side low man tacking roles or things like that. Just because if you're going to give up a numbers advantage, you'd rather it be in a way where you have a chance to recover rather than an immediate, you know, pass and wide open shot. And so when there's a middle post up, there is no weak side. You've basically got like two strong sides. And Jokic does such a good job getting deep into the post that if you let him play 1v1, like, he's going to score. And we see that with looking at, I tracked every one of his post-ups this season, yeah, or every one of his post-up scoring possessions this season heading into this series. And him in the middle is just absolute dominance. It is so much better than him on one of the blocks. And part of it is because it's harder to help. But the thing is, and you see this in the data, if you do help on his post-ups in the middle, they're still much less effective. So here are the numbers. On the left or right blocks, we see him only played 1v1 26% of the time. And when he's played 1v1, he scores 1.25 points per possession. So about a quarter of the time he gets one-on-one, 1.25 points per possession. Against help on the left or right blocks, that's 75% of the time, he's at 1.06. Still really good offense, but much less scary. So you want to send help. In the middle, he gets to play 1v1 53% of the time because it's so much harder for teams to send help. So that on its own is better. But then in addition to that, instead of it being 1.25 points per possession, because he can go either way, it's just a harder 1v1 to deal with. He's at 1.4 points per possession when you play him 1v1 and he's got a middle post up. And then if you do send help, it is less effective than when you send help for him on one of the blocks, but it's still much more effective as the defense than allowing him to play 1v1. And that's at 1.18 points per possession. So no matter what, sending help is better than him playing 1v1. Just if you allow the middle post up in the first place, you're going to have some problems. And the Lakers having Rui on him and playing him 1v1 in the middle is like a death sentence for a defense. He's going to score on that just about every time. And we saw that. And we saw that against AD as well. Like, you have to send help, especially if it's in the middle. But if it's in the middle to start with, you know, you've got a problem.
Okay, Tim, moving on here, kind of from what we saw here in game two, things we want to see more of in game three. You mentioned stack action. We haven't seen a ton of it. I think that's an easy thing to kind of adjust and start spamming. I guess, where do you see the adjustments coming from Denver, and how can LA keep their advantage in countering there?
Yeah, so the way that you would defend stack action is, first, the offense needs to use it, which is problem number one for the Lakers. Assuming they go to it, you can. There are two, I guess, schools of thought with defending stack action. And to I guess, remind everyone of what we're talking about, we've got, just say, a ball screen at the top of the key with a shooter in each corner and a shooter under the rim. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a shooter, but it's better when it is a shooter. And you're going to have that ball screen set. And then let's say that, you know, this is really good against drop coverage. Let's say Jokic is in drop coverage, defending LeBron, trying to attack downhill in this ball screen. And then all of a sudden, Jokic has someone standing behind him, screening him and sealing him off from being able to defend the rim. And that's that stack guy under the rim. After setting that back screen, he can then sprint up to the top of the key. And so that often gets you open threes at the top of the key or open drives to the rim. Or it might get the roll man some open opportunities. And then the other thing with that you could do is, so that's stack up or the back screen variant, stack down or the down screen variant, is when instead of the shooter setting the back screen, he's the one receiving a screen. So he runs up to the top of the key and that's read number one. Or sometimes you can just have them just kind of exchange. There's no screening. They're just, one guy rolls to the rim, the other guy runs up to the top of the key, roll and replace. All of those are good. All of them work well against drop coverage. And what the defense can look to do is either switch both actions, both screens basically, or they could try to switch between the ball handler's defender and the shooter's defender under the rim. And the way you would do that is you kind of almost zone up, and once you are screened, let's say I'm defending LeBron James top of the key. Once I'm screened, instead of chasing him and trying to get back in front, I turn around and I wait for the shooter to run up to me, because that's generally where that guy's going. And if he runs right to me, great, I'm where I need to be. And then as the shooter's defender, let's say it's, I don't know, D'Lo's defender, he's defending under the rim. Instead of chasing D'Lo up to the top of the key, he just runs out to stop the LeBron drive. So they just switch places. And then the roller's man just kind of stays on the roller. So those are the two ways to defend it. It really kind of depends on who's on the court for both teams and who's in the action for both teams. Because if Jamal Murray's guarding D'Lo or Austin and they're the guy under the rim, I don't want one of them trying to guard LeBron James attacking downhill. If D'Lo and Austin are the two guys, the two, you know, shooter and ball handler in the action, that might make sense to switch. That's not a problem. But if LeBron's in there, I think that's a really tricky switch to do. So then the other route could be switch everything. And that can also result in some wonky matchups. So it really just kind of depends who's where. If I end up with Jokic or Gordon on LeBron, okay. If I end up with a point guard on LeBron, that's a problem. And so it just kind of depends on, you know, what's going on. If it's D'Lo that's the ball handler, maybe you're a little bit less worried about him being guarded by one of the bigs because he's less of an ISO player. So it truly depends on the specifics, but those would be the adjustments to expect from Denver. And then if you are facing the guard-guard switching variant, the thing that you would do to beat it is, instead of your shooter under the rim running to his new defender who's waiting for him at the top of the key, you just have him run out to one of the wings instead, where his man is not there. And usually based on the timing of that play, that ends up being an open three, or, you know, the corner defender's corner shooter's defender runs over and you know, just make the one more pass and then get an open corner three, or you can just have that guy cut. So run to where they aren't when they're playing more of that zone style of defense. And then if they're just switching all of the actions, you want to try to utilize those step up screens to get that inside position and attack at the rim on the rolls. And that works well, especially because you've got the corners filled and there's nobody else really in the paint. So for stack, that's the way to go about it. The Lakers need to attack ice defense better. You can flip screens, snake screens, short roll. You can try to initiate from the post. Instead, you could try to use step up ball screens, Chicago action, like I talked about, chase dribble handoffs where you throw the ball ahead and then chase your pass to screen. That's not really something you can ice well. Downhill dribble handoffs, you can't really ice. You can pick and pop. You can have the screener then go set a pin down screen the other way and kind of throw it back for a three, or you can look to disguise it. So there are, what is that, 11, 12 different options for attacking ice coverage. So those are a couple of the things I'd look to do. The Lakers also didn't run much from a post hell beater standpoint. So just 80 in the post. I don't care who he's facing. It could be Gordon, it could be Jokic. I don't care. Denver sending help. Run the help beaters that you've run all season long to attack what you're seeing in those scenarios. There's nothing new they can throw at you at this point. It's going to be one of like two or three things. So read the situation and, you know, run the right counter. That should be a given, but thus far this series, it has not been. And to me, that's concerning.
I mean, for so many years, right, we've seen the Lakers freelance offense go into either LeBron AD pick and rolls or LeBron or AD post-ups, right, with very little in between. And they don't seem to be operating out of the post in its primary function of their offense, as we talked about, a much more set-driven offense now. Which you've tracked, and you know, we talk about those sets. I know it's hard through an audio medium, but when you join us live for the games, we call all these out. So make sure you do that, because I do think that's helpful. But do you want to see them play out of the post more? Because there was a point during the season that they've got really good with their help beaters, to your point, whether it's, you know, flares, cutting from middle, cutting from side, baseline, you know, timing even on the weak side dives on a LeBron AD pick and roll. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to find what else the Lakers can squeeze out of this juice here.
Yeah, I think that would be a good thing to do. They had 5 post-up scoring possessions in game 1. They only had 9 post-up scoring possessions in game 2. And in both games, they were scoring exactly 1 point per possession on those post-ups. And in both games, that is better efficiency than their half-court offense in general. And so it has worked. It hasn't been phenomenal. It's been okay. And that's because you've got great post players and you've been sort of inconsistent with the help beaters, but it's not new. Like, I think if you're looking at just trying to simplify the game, we've got a couple stars that can post up really well. Post ups draw a lot of fouls. Denver does not have a lot of depth that they trust. And we will have the ball in the right player's hands with the chance to play make or score. The reads are very simple and the defense can only do a couple things. If you want to take what can be a beautiful game of 100 different scenarios and turn it into something really simple and run the same thing over and over and be meticulous, this could be a way to do that. This could be a way to control tempo and make sure that we're not accidentally getting like Torian Prince ball screen freelance plays or I don't know. Like that would be a way to go. The help beaters have to be there. And this seems like the type of thing that I don't see that there's no acceptable reason for me that they wouldn't be there, because you've seen these types of defense before and you've beat these types of defense before. So I'd be in favor of that. It would look a lot like AD post up and face up, read the floor. If the defense is kind of around the paint, you're looking for guys to cut into it, either from the opposite dunker spot or corner. That's probably going to be Rui. He'll just kind of flash to the middle. Or maybe like LeBron cutting down the middle of the paint for those. We've seen so many highlight plays, Tom, of AD passing to Bron mid stride and he flushes it and it looks awesome. And that's because the defense is not in the paint, but around it, trying to deter Anthony Davis from being able to drive. And that's what we saw from Denver in game 2. And if they're double teaming, you can cut and get it to the double, or you can use pin and flare screens. Like, there are only really a couple options. It's just a matter of where on the court do we cut or set the flare from and just execute. And execution was a big issue for LA in the fourth quarter last night, or last game as well, because that's something where they called sets 75% of their plays. They only had 20 points. And I looked through the film on that and there's so many missed opportunities because guys just did not execute. So I don't, maybe we can get to that next, but to me, I definitely think the post is something you want to lean on more, because it has been a key strength of yours throughout the season. It's what got you here. It's one of those key things that you're built for this. You're good at it. Yeah. Do it more. You can't forget to post up.
For anyone out there, I don't think we're we're calling for this to be a strictly post offense. You just kind of need to rope that into the primary freelance option or one of the primary go-tos, right? This is where you develop an identity. This is where I was trying to find when have they hit that identity. And I felt like they did when they were running that help beater post-based offense along with their sets and getting, you know, AD. Remember that month or two, he was like passing the ball incredibly well out of doubles. The Lakers offense was looking great. And it's not just, you know, the uptick in shooting. It was a lot of factors. And that, I don't see that even when they are posting up, it doesn't seem like the same level of help beating and kind of on the same page. But I don't know. You know, to be fair, let me just a quick diversion. I've been seeing this out there with us and a lot of people talking about the play calling of the Lakers, Tim. A lot of people seem to think it's like a lot of energy to run a set versus running freelance offense. And I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think both can be very, you know, lenient, lackadaisical for movement sake, you know, to set up an ISO or what have you. Or they can be very, you know, complicated. I don't know. What do you think?
I would say that, I mean, on average, you'll probably have more total player movement with sets, but you're going to be much more effective. And it's the type of thing that we see plenty of other teams run plays way more frequently than the Lakers, and it's no problem for them. So are our guys just not conditioned? Do they not care about winning enough? Do they not want it? Like, what's, I don't know. It's not tremendously more taxing on you. Like, it's the difference between like a high ball screen with nothing going on and a high ball screen where you first have a guy who like cuts to the rim and then he runs out to the corner for an exit screen and it kind of like breaks the help defense. That's like the difference between a basic play and, you know, a set play, or I don't know, a post up with everybody standing around and the defense double team your guy, or a post up where the defense double teams your guy and so somebody steps in front of a defender, sets a pin and flare screen, and you kick it out for an open three instead of a contested three. It's not a lot of energy, not a lot of effort needed, but it's just kind of taking what the defense gives. And, you know, usually weak side action is going to be really helpful against a team like Denver that so aggressively rotates and tags rollers so hard and like almost preemptively. They're so vulnerable on their weak side. And that's where having that weak side action can be really, really important. And it's something I want to see the Lakers lean more on. And that's going to require more organized offense. And so far in the series, they've been much more effective running plays that have weak side action compared to when they're doing anything else that does not have weak side action. So when they're doing it, it's worked. And if you're going to beat this Denver team, who is better than you, you've got to maximize everything you've got. And to me, that includes play calling at a really high rate.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, you mentioned 20 points in that fourth quarter against Denver, 75% organized offense. Lakers got three free throws, only made one of them. That hurts. Six fouls. So what else about that fourth quarter? Like, was it just the execution? Because that high rate of offense, they would have generated more than 20 points more times in the season. Is it kind of fluky plays, or let's dive into those plays now?
Yeah, sure. So looking at it, there's a lot that, to me, at face value, that is like, oh, wow, that's weird. You don't expect to see that. What is going on? Normally, when the Lakers are running plays, they're doing really, really well. And so it is a really good question. And it's one that if someone's trying to push back on running plays, they say, hey, well, look, you ran plays a bunch in that fourth quarter. It didn't work. What gives? And so I think it is very much worth diving into. The Lakers got three good outcomes in a row, or three good, you know, shots in a row from Stack. Weren't able to hit the third one. They went to this concept way too late, but I mean, we saw some good stuff in here. We saw the step-up screens that avoids the ice. You got to get a little bit more weak side action. We saw Denver help a lot and try to shrink the floor against those. But the technique on rolls and just making the right reads and screening correctly are just some basic, simple things that would yield much better results and unfortunately did not happen in the fourth quarter.
So again, for our pod listeners, we watched some of the plays live. If you want to come join us on playback in the future, to summarize what we watched, like the lack of execution, I think there were better reads than what was made on some of these plays. I think the sets were right. Some of the techniques on the rolls from Rui, AD had gravity on his rolls, but he was not found. And when D'Lo, you know, did pass to him over the top, was a little too high, some unforced errors, some missed open looks, some difficult, tough made shots, some of the ones that they did make, which is funny. But yeah, execution down the stretch will kill you. And, you know, if one of those buckets go down in that 4-minute stretch, obviously it's a different game. But they were doing the things that we wanted to see from them, at least. And, you know, results be damned, the process was better, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, Lakers with, I think it was three injured rotation players or guys that would be, you know, considered in the rotation. Like, they could get some reinforcements. It's not going to happen in game three. Vando and Wood still out, but you would have loved to get this game and come into that game three with momentum. And if they had just hit that, if LeBron had hit that shot, Tom, I'm on here talking about how the Lakers had a 60% organized offense rate. It is a huge uptick. And now instead of being, this is their third loss on the season in games where they were at 55% or higher, they're now 19-3. If he would have hit that shot, they'd be 20-2. And it's like, oh, here come the Lakers. They were up big. They were organized. Like, there's still more to clean up, of course. But Darvinham answered the bell and called a bunch of sets, and the team did a good job and they won. That's the difference in that one shot going in or not. And so to me, if you're LA going back at home, you know you can play with this team. You just played with them in the altitude, in their house, with their crowds. You had big leads in both games. When you were taking care of business for yourself, the team was winning. It wasn't that Denver was doing things you had no shot at, or they were, you know, outmaneuvering you with adjustments. Like, it was just a matter of take care of your business, execute the little things, do your job, hit shots that are open, and, you know, keep calm plays, and you can win these games. The problem is they have to win 4 out of 5 now. And that's, I mean, realistically here, I think they've lost the series with this loss. But they've shown that they can compete with this team. the thing is, you know, competing with this team and playing them close, it's still hard to win a game, you know, 4 out of 5 games when you're playing them close. Yeah. So they've got to come out with some energy, hopefully get some of these, you know, reinforcements in to boost things. It would be great if the bench can give him a little bit more of a boost. Spencer Dinwiddie hasn't done much offensively, and he's someone that being guarded by Jamal Murray, like he got to be able to make some things happen. We've seen Torian play well off the bench, but you know, Hayes is a lob threat as a role man, just as a bigger body. You'd love to see more impact from him. Rui had a horrible, horrible game, not just with the shot making, but some of the decision making, some he's of the defense, games, some of the technique. We just looked at, he had 3 or 4 plays where he just rolled incorrectly. It looks like a wing being used as a big instead of a big, you know, doing things he's done his whole life. And a lot of those little things add up. It's a game of inches in a way. And, you know, D'Lo hits that lob pass on target, it's a different game. Rui inside pivots once or twice, it could be a different game. LeBron hits that three, it's a different game. But it's tough. So, got to keep fighting.
This is a funny way to ask this, but the Little Red Riding Hood scale of Gabe Vincent, not enough, just right, or too much?
I think we could probably see a bit more of Gabe. He's getting back into the rhythm of things and playing good defense. I guess it depends, you know. I think I'd probably want to see a little bit more of him. But at the same time, Tom, we didn't see a single Laker player play more than, like, none of them broke the 40s in minutes either. So it's not like there's a ton of time to be taking from them. So I think you're probably looking at taking time from Dinwiddie and playing more of a 7-man instead of an 8-man rotation. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I mean, Dinwiddie can still play. Just right now, he's getting a little bit more than Gabe was.
I guess they're playing more of like – they played 9 guys because Hayes only had 6. So Torian like 22. And a half. Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
It's like a quarter shift from Hayes almost each time.
Mm-hmm. So maybe go 7.5 and give – like Dinwiddie's at 10 minutes. Vincent's at 15. Do you go 25-0? Do you go 20-5?
Well, I think those were flipped the first game. I think Gabe just had like that one stretch, and I thought he looked pretty good, but he picked up 3 fouls. I think it's just flipping that. So if you have 15 minutes for one and 10 for the other, like Spencer definitely needs to play better. I wouldn't, you know, hate getting a look at Max because he's been on the team, but I mean, that's not happening. But Spencer's been rough. Torian's been the only good bench player and with any consistency, and that hasn't helped for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think some general size would be good. I think getting Hayes less of the LeBron Rui front court, which offensively can be okay, but defensively I worry about just being bigger, I think in general would be helpful, but also moving some of those Dinwiddie minutes towards Gabe, I would not be opposed to either.
All right. Well, that's a good place to leave it, I think, Tim. I'm gonna leave this with one more thing. I just saw this on Reddit. Apparently, in the Backyard Podcast Discord server, D'Angelo Russell had some things to say.
Ooh. Okay.
He said, "I can't say what I want to say because I'll get fined and it will go viral." I'ma just say, "Told you I would make them bitches salute emoji." Second message, we still gonna win. Don't give up on us.
Okay.
I love D'Lo, man. I really hope they can figure something out with him because he's showing me something this year, man. And not just with his play on the court, but I always mess with D'Lo when he was on the team the first time. I don't know if I saw this coming, but I like it. That's all I got.
I like it. I like the confidence. You got to be confident. If they can, I mean, they've shown us enough that they can go back out and like win the 2 games in LA. Like that could happen. It can absolutely happen. They got to put a couple things together. This team has the firepower. If they can win those 2 games and then get those reinforcements back or get those reinforcements back for game 4, you know, that's the 3 series. Lakers fully healthy, having 1-2 in a row is a different scenario. But
that's right.
That is certainly a skipping ahead and assuming 2 wins, which you cannot do against this Denver squad. So credit to them. They've been a good opponent, but it's in a weird way, it's felt like more of an us series than a them series. And who knows how long that'll continue, because they've got good coaching. They've got good players. They did not shoot well from three as a team last game. Jamal Murray did not shoot well despite hitting that game winner. You can't, like, the margin's gone. It is, you know, burn the boats all out. You know, I don't care how many minutes guys are playing. If they're able to get out there and run, get them out there, you know, don't overplay them to the point where they're too tired to be effective. But it is as short as the rotation needs to be, it should be right now.
Right. Yeah. You're going to see them, you know, maybe as soon as game three, get in that desperation mode. We'll be curious what that looks like. But join us on Playback as always as we watch the games together. Thank you so much. And until next time, we will talk to y'all later. Peace.